everyone. Welcome back to The Window. This is our World Cup Group G preview. This is the 8th of 8 previews, so if you've listened to some of our other previews and are still sticking around and listening, we thank you for that. We've got a great group here today that is going to preview Group G. We've got a group that features Brazil, Serbia, Switzerland, and Cameroon. And Brazil is a team that a lot of people are picking to win the whole tournament, but Serbia and Switzerland and Cameroon could even be a dark horse in this group are very good teams by their own right. And it's not a foregone conclusion that Brazil will top this group. I think it would be a bit of a surprise to see them not go through, but they're certainly a team that a lot of people are expecting to go deep into this tournament. So before we get into the group and talk through the teams, we wanted to introduce our guests and thank them very much for joining us on the podcast. So, Leonardo, let's start with you.
Okay. Hi, Brandon. It's nice talking to you. Thanks for the invitation. I'm Leonardo Bertozzi from São Paulo, Brazil. I'm a journalist for ESPN Brazil, and we cover international football here. We broadcast the main European leagues like the Premier League, the Serie A, La Liga, and Ligue 1. So we are very much familiar with all the players we're going to see in this World Cup. And as you said, there's a huge expectation around Brazil here because, you know, it's 20 years since the last world title, and Brazil is very proud of being the only five-time world champion. But right now, all children, not one of them have seen Brazil win a World Cup. So I believe there's a huge expectation, especially among the young people, because they have never seen Brazil to win a World Cup.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us, Leonardo. Daniel, let's go to you.
Thanks, Brandon, for inviting me on the podcast. I'm Daniel Adju. I'm a lawyer based in Manchester, but I have a strong interest in African football, in particular Cameroon. My dad's from Cameroon. And so I grew up a lot around African football, in particular, watching the kind of glory days of Cameroon in the 90s and early 2000s when they had top players like Samuel Eto'o in their team. In recent years, it's been a bit tougher for Cameroon in terms of doing well, especially at World Cup level. They've had a couple of pretty terrible exits at the group stage, but hopefully they can do better this time. And I'm looking forward to kind of having a deeper chat about this group and Cameroon's prospects.
Definitely. And where can people find you on social media?
So my social media is just my name, Daniel Adju. I'm on Twitter and Instagram as well.
Awesome. And Craig?
Hi, my name's Craig King. I run the @FootballSwissEN Twitter account, which covers all Swiss football for the last 10 years or so, men's, women's, and the domestic leagues as well. And I'm excited for this tournament coming up. I think it's a very exciting group, and expectations are high for Switzerland after Euro 2020. And I think this group is going to be really interesting.
Yeah, it will be. And let's talk a little bit about Switzerland, Craig, with what they're bringing to the table. You look at the draw that they got, and probably not that thrilled, because getting drawn with Brazil and ultimately getting drawn with Serbia, who is, in our opinion, the best team to come out of that pot. How are you feeling in terms of the draw, and do you think Switzerland is going to have a difficult time with this group?
So we had two of those teams before in 2018, in Brazil and Serbia, so we kind of are familiar, but I would also say that those two teams, as much as Brazil are always good, they're probably better than they were 4 years ago, and Serbia seem to be, all their strikers seem to be scoring every weekend, so that's also an issue. Cameroon, I don't know a lot about, but I know their attackers are also very good. So it's going to be very difficult, but I always trust Switzerland to do well. I think this team has surprised people for years now, and it's a very settled group in that respect, that there's so many that have been here since 2014 World Cup. So they definitely have the capability to go through and qualify again like they did in 2018, but yeah, it's going to be difficult, and it could have been easier than what they were given.
Yeah, a lot of the players that are familiar names, Jan Sommer, Haris Seferovic, Shaqiri, Granit Xhaka, most of them are now 30 and over. Do you still expect them to feature throughout the group stage? And What are your expectations for their performance, knowing that they're probably on the backside of their career heading into this World Cup?
Yeah, definitely. I think they'll feature prominently, all those players that everyone knows. I think you're right, they are kind of probably approaching maybe their last couple of major tournaments with the team, but they're still so important. Granit Xhaka's always been the kind of engine room in there, and Jerdan Shaqiri, who's been fantastic in these tournaments especially. The only concern with him is, you know, that's a way there, but there's still so many key players in the team that are experienced, they've been here before, and they've achieved great things. And we've also some youngsters coming through. Hopefully we'll replace those. So yeah, to be excited about what we've got and before coming through too.
Awesome. Leonardo, let's go to you and ask you a little bit about Brazil as well. And what were the thoughts for Brazilians about this draw? Because as Craig was talking about Switzerland, we haven't really talked about Serbia yet, but two very good European teams. What is the mood like in Brazil when it comes to that opposition in the group?
Well, it's pretty much the same group as 2018. It's just Cameroon and not Costa Rica, but Brazil played Switzerland and Serbia 4 years ago, then started against Switzerland, got a draw, a difficult draw, 1-1. And then in the last game, I believe it was the best game of Brazil did in the group phase, it won fairly easily. So right now it's the opposite, because Serbia is the first game, then Switzerland, and the Serbia game might be a little nervous. There's a bit of anxiety here because Brazilians are very optimistic with this team. From 1 year to now, a lot of players evolved. A lot of players are being protagonists in the club. So we've got like players like Vinicius, like Rodrigo, playing starters for Real Madrid and deciding matches and titles like the Champions League. And they got new players in Europe reaching heights like Antony for Manchester United, and players reaching the Premier League like Lucas Paquetá. So Brazil has just an amazing amount of talent. But we also have a lot of respect for what the other teams in the group are doing, because, for example, Serbia, we watch the Premier League here every week, and there's Mitrovic scoring, and then we watch the Serie A, there's Vlahovic scoring, and there's Milinkovic-Savic making an assist, and Tadic, so there's Kostic making an assist. So we recognize Serbia has a lot of talent in the attacking phase. Defensively, I think not so much. I believe Serbia, they are not a clean sheet kind of team. They can concede goals in a lot of games, so Brazil might have a lot of chances in this game, I believe, more than against Switzerland. Switzerland, well, Craig can talk better than me, but Switzerland has Sommer, which is one of the best international goalkeepers right now, and it's very hard scoring past him. But against Serbia, I believe they will have chances, but Brazil is capable of creating chances, of dominating the game and winning. And then the last round against Cameroon, Brazil historically fares well against African sides, wins which with confidence. It was like that in 94, it was like that in 2014 here in Brazil. So we must see how they get there, if Brazil is already qualified, if Cameroon is still with the chance, because it could be a dead rubber. So it's important to see how teams are reaching that game, to understand even the coach choice, because Brazil starts the World Cup in the last day of the round. So it's the Group G. So Brazil, if reaches the final, it's like 25 days, 7 matches. So wow. It will be important to rotate, to use this huge squad, which is a very talented squad, but a lot of respect for the opponents. But Brazil, don't expect anything different than the first place in this group, because it's very important. It's important to avoid Portugal. I don't know if Portugal will be the first team in the other group, but if it goes like we expect, that Portugal is first and Uruguay is second, Brazil is fairly used to playing Uruguay, to beating Uruguay. So it would be a more interesting matchup in the round of 16 than Portugal would.
Absolutely.
So one of the questions I always like to ask is, and you know, one of my favorite aspects of the game itself is the cultural side of things. And so can you just kind of give our listeners a sense of the vibe in Brazil right now. How's everybody feeling? And like, is the place just totally a buzz, or what's it like?
Look, Joe, we have this habit here of painting out the streets before the World Cup. So we start painting with the flags, with the colors of the flag. And we have a picture of Gabriel Jesus, who plays now for Arsenal. When he was a kid, he was painting the street himself before the 2014 World Cup. Yeah. And then 4 years later, he was at the World Cup. And then he's there again. And he's still looking for his first World Cup goal because he didn't manage to get one in Russia. So it's a cultural aspect here. This year, it's a fairly different year because we just had tough president elections, and the colors of the national team were pretty much associated with the current president Bolsonaro, which is a far-right president. He got 49% of the voting, so it was a very tight vote, and still many people associate the colors of the national shirt with them. So the CBF, the National Federation, is starting a campaign. Look, it's our shirt. It's not a political shirt. It's not a far right statement. It's our colors. You know, they don't know these colors. It's everyone's colors. And then the Lula, who's coming back to the president, he's going to be president for the third time. He was president from 2002 to 2010. He said it in a recent speech. We have to get our colors back. We have to get the yellow shirt back because it belongs to the people. It belongs our national symbols, our football symbols. They belong to us. So many people are afraid to be associated with far right, you know. But even the future president, he's talking. No, don't be ashamed. Use our flag, use our colors, because right now it represents our country. It represents our team, and we are proud of our football team. We are 5-time world champions, and it's our World Cup to enjoy, you know.
I would ask that same question actually to Craig, since I know he just was over in Switzerland. Did you get any sort of sense for the vibe there as well? Are they, what's the feeling like in terms of how they think their country's going to do?
There's definite excitement after, as I say, your performance. Now, almost about sharing Swiss football fans on Twitter, is people are always surprised by from the fan. How their displays and this, all that sort of stuff. It's a fans, very diverse country, and I think it's just great that everyone comes together, regardless of where they're from and all that, and supports the team. Sometimes it can be so good if the performances are certainly targeted, depending on background and all that. That's a kind of not good side of it, but when everyone comes together, like against France last year, it's just amazing to see everyone was out streets celebrating, and it just shows you what this really means to the entire country that comes from so many different backgrounds. It's one of the beauties of the World Cup, I would say, or international football in general. It just brings everyone together, and this one will be no different.
That's awesome. Daniel, I want to ask you a little bit about the Cameroon team, because you look at these other three teams in the group, and it has to be a little bit discouraging to be drawn with Brazil, Serbia, and Switzerland, knowing that you need to finish in the top two to get out of the group. What is the mood like with Cameroon, and what do you think that they need to do to pull a surprise and qualify to the knockout round?
So what I would say is, first, is actually not a bad group for Cameroon at all. I think Brazil are the top team. I expect them to win all three games pretty comfortably. They're by far the best team out of the three. But I think that Switzerland, Serbia and Cameroon, the level between the players is actually pretty small. And Cameroon have got one of the best goalkeepers in the world, Andre Onana. They've got Anguissa in midfield, one of the best midfielders in the world this season for Napoli. And they've also got Choupo-Moting, who's also been in great form for Bayern Munich. And they've got a couple other good attackers, Vincent Aboubakar, who was the top goalscorer in the AFCON. And he's always a nightmare to play against. Defenders hate playing against someone like that. Very physical player, great in the air, just rough and rugged type character. So I think that Cameroon aren't too concerned with the group. They always knew they were going to get one of the big teams, and getting Brazil, I think everybody's going to think Brazil's going to beat everyone. They're going to focus on playing each other. And I think also with Cameroon playing Brazil last, that's a big advantage for them. If they can get a win in one of the first two games, they'll be thinking, if we can get 3 points, 4 points, Brazil will probably be through. We play Brazil, they'll be taking it easy, maybe put some of their backup options in. You could get a result there. So I think Cameroon are actually pretty pleased with the group and also confident that they can get second place. And I think that having Rigobert Song as the manager, who's a legend in Cameroonian football, played at the highest level. You got Etu now in charge of the Cameroon FA, and things are a lot smoother now with Cameroon. You've had a lot of problems in the past with going to major tournaments, and the players are unhappy because they've not been paid their bonuses. There's been disorganization in terms of travel and all this sort of stuff. But it's all looks like it's in place. Everything looks smooth. It's a squad that's got a lot of experience as well, high level experience at the top levels in Europe. And so I think that Cameroon, you might think, oh, they're not that great. But if you actually analyze the players, look at the team, who their top players are, they match up more than adequately with the Swiss and the Serbs. And I think that looking at past tournaments, the Serbs have flat to deceive. I can't remember the last time they performed well at any major tournament. And the Swiss usually do pretty well, but the cycle's coming to the end. Most of the top players, apart from a couple of the younger players like Mbolo, a lot of the top players, ironically, Cameroonian, but a lot of their top players are getting, as you said, towards 30 or into the 30s. And I think that really, we don't know how Switzerland are going to turn out, but it could be one where they do well again, or that's the end of the cycle and they flop and finish bottom of the group. It wouldn't surprise me if that was the case. And so I think that people can write Cameroon off and think, oh, they're not that great. But if you actually look at it, they have a chance of getting second place in the group.
And so you look at the roster, and you mentioned some big names that I think people are familiar with. There are also 10 players on the roster that have three or fewer caps with the national team. So there are a lot of new players that are with the squad. Do you expect any or many of those players to get meaningful minutes, or do you think they're more reserve roles?
I think that most of the players who play will be the experienced players, as I said. Guys like Onana will start. Tolo, who's in the US, plays for Seattle Sounders, one of the better left backs in the US. In midfield, you've got Anguissa as a top player. You've got Incham, used to play for Celtic, now plays in the Championship. He's a decent player. You've got Martin Hongla as well, who did very well at the AFCON. He plays in Serie A. And then in the attacks, very experienced with Aboubakar and Choupo-Moting. You've got a couple of players from the Cameroonian League, but I don't expect them to play very much. They're not necessarily the better players from the league, but I think they've been included to kind of, so essentially with the players who get called up, the clubs get a certain amount of money for every day the team is at the tournament. I think it's, I don't know, it's in the thousands, and obviously Cameroonian clubs don't have that much money, so if they call up a couple of the kind of players from the local league, that'll help those clubs get a bit of money, which can help them financially. But I don't expect either of those players to play. There's two of them in the squad, and they've also got another good striker, Jean-Pierre Nsami, who plays for Young Boys, he's been a great striker for them over the last few years as well. So I think that the Cameroonian team, although, as I said, it's probably a bit underrated, and you had said that a few of them are quite inexperienced, but I don't think many of the inexperienced players are going to play. I expect it to be the players that have been with the national team for 3 to 5 years will be the ones that are kind of leading the team and kind of expected to perform.
So with Cameroon as well, just the one additional thing that comes to mind, and I'm a little curious to hear your thoughts about the AFCON and playing that at home and ultimately falling short. Do you think that has discouraged this team at all heading into the World Cup, or do you think they've moved past it at this point and are really focused on the task at hand?
I think it was actually I think they'll be like kind of not that disappointed. They went out the semi-final on penalties to Egypt, but that's no disgrace. The team wasn't, I don't think it was expected to get to the semi-finals based on the other teams in the tournament, so they probably overperformed. And then also in the qualifiers for the World Cup, they won in the 94th minute. They scored to beat Algeria 2-1 in Algiers, and it's the first time that Cameroon have won away against Algeria, I think, since either they've never done it before, the last time they did it maybe in the 70s or the 60s. And so they will come in with quite a lot of confidence from their good AFCON performance and also beating Algeria away from home to get to the World Cup. So I think Cameroon are in a good moment from a kind of a mental standpoint. And as I said, with a legend in charge of the team and in charge of the FA as well, the whole kind of mood around Cameroon's a lot better than it has been in previous tournaments. So I think that they may be able to do better this time than they have since really 1990 World Cup when they got to the quarterfinals.
And so for Leonardo with Brazil, what do you expect? And you mentioned the the depth of the squad, of course, and there is just a tremendous amount of talent on the Brazil squad. Presuming they get to the knockout round, what do you expect the starting 11 to look like? Because I think you don't have the issues that you have with other teams where it's kind of a, okay, well, we know a core set of players and who's going to step up and become that go-to player that we can start. With Brazil, there are so many players that are there to choose from. What do you expect that best 11 to look like?
Okay, so first of all, this time, Neymar is not expected to carry the team on his back. And 4 years ago, he was like that. And he wasn't at the best physical point, and he had that behavioral thing to falling down and to become a laughing stock. And then it's in the past. Right now, he's 30 years old. He knows it can be his top World Cup if he is in the right state of mind and physical. And I believe he's there, but he has better players now around him. And okay, Brazil might not have now a number nine, a historical number nine, like it had in so many World Cups in the past, like Careca and Romário and Ronaldo. I mean, it was an amazing streak of number nines, elite number nines. Maybe we don't have one like that, but we had players very adapted to the playing style. Richarlison from Tottenham, he's playing very well for the national team, and like he loves playing to the national team. He always gives his best there. The other day he got injured and he cried because he thought he might not go to World Cup, but he's okay now. So I believe Richarlison can start with Gabriel Jesus being an option to him, but not starting. And Rafinha of Barcelona playing on the right, might be Antony, might be Rodrigo, but Rafinha will start because Rafinha, from 1 year to now, he started almost every game and always playing well. And in the left side, people expected Vinicius to be the starter, but Tite don't want two wingers. He's like putting Paquetá in the left side, so he can balance the midfield with Casemiro and Fred. Now they play together in Manchester United. But watch out for Bruno Guimarães, the Newcastle player, because he's playing amazing in the Premier League, and he has another style compared to Fred. And he's a player who might get into this team during the World Cup. In every World Cup Brazil won, there has been an important change during the competition. In 94, it was Mazinho who got the place from Raí. In 2002, it was Kleberson who got the place in the starting during the knockouts, and he was amazing. And then it didn't work out for him in the Premier League, but in 2002, he was very important. So Brazil always has this tradition of changing during the competition and then clicking it together to get a good World Cup. In the defense, there's not much to think because Brazil has Thiago Silva and Marquinhos. And 4 years ago, many people didn't expect Thiago to reach this World Cup, but he's reaching in the highest level. He won a Premier League. He's doing well in the he won a Champions League. He's doing well in the Premier League. Marquinhos also a top class defender. He took Bremer, the best Serie A defender in the last season. It was a last minute inclusion. He's very impressed with him. So if he needs to be there, he will be there. And the question mark here is the fullbacks, because Brazil has this tradition. They had Cafu and Roberto Carlos for many, many years, then Michael and Marcelo. So it's a tradition of very good attacking fullbacks. Right now, we have Danilo, which is not the same characteristic, and Alexandro or Alex Telles, but Alexandro might be the starting. And sometimes they play center-back for Juventus. So right now, we expect Brazil's fullbacks to be more defensive, one of them to join the midfield when Brazil is attacking. But it's a different kind of Brazilian fullback. In 2002, Brazil played with three center-backs, so Cafu and Roberto Carlos could go up and down the wing all the time. And of course, they had Ronaldinho, Ronaldo and Rivaldo up front. So it was an amazing team to have together. But right now, I believe it's the main question mark. Alisson is a very reliable goalkeeper. Brazilians trust him much more than 4 years ago, and he was a bit of an unknown here, even he was playing well for Roma. But there's a huge depth. You really should keep an eye on Bruno Guimarães, because I believe he can get a place in this team when the competition evolves.
Yeah, it's there's no shortage of names. It's impressive to hear how many just great Brazilian talents there are And they're going to be a tough team to beat for anyone, not just in this group, but throughout the tournament.
Sorry, Brandon. I have to say about the controversial call, Daniel Alves, right? Because, well, he's 39 right now. And
he's playing in Mexico.
He's playing in Mexico. And it's the first time a player playing in Mexico is called to Brazil to the World Cup. And he didn't do great. He played midfield there, so he wasn't even playing in his position. But Tite believes his technical qualities and his leadership, he played World Cup. He's one of the players most tight in the story of the game. So he believes he could be important. But in Brazil, we got a bit shocked because we didn't expect that. But they went scouts to see him play with the Barcelona B team to see how he was. And they thought, well, he's physically okay, so we're going to keep it. But it was really controversial here. I don't know if he's going to get minutes. But he's there. It's the only most controversial things because, like you said, for the other sector of the team, there are many options, and maybe Firmino should still be there. But he got Martinelli, who's playing amazing for Arsenal, the first team in the Premier League right now. So he took a bet on this player, and I believe he did right.
Who would you have taken if not for Dani Alves?
Well, I believe he could have taken one more center back because Militão can play right back. He started as a right back here in Brazil. It's not a position with great names. We got Emerson Royal. He's struggling a bit with Tottenham. Defensively, he doesn't seem to me a very reliable player. But he could have done that because we have players who can play right back. Fabinho could play right back. So, and with center backs, I believe, I mean, France is taking 6 center backs. It's a position where you can have injuries or suspensions. I believe 4 is a bit short for a tournament which you can play 7 matches.
Yeah. We want to talk a little bit about Serbia also in this group. We haven't spoken about them too much. I want to give you some statistics, though, to start with in terms of goals scored for the national team. So at the World Cup, here's the list of the most goals scored for their national team. Ronaldo's number 1, Messi number 2, Lewandowski, Neymar, Lukaku, Luis Suarez, Cavani, Harry Kane, and then Alexander Mitrovic. And so among all players at the tournament, he is in the top 10. He's number 9 overall in terms of goals scored for the national team. Serbia defeated Portugal to qualify for the World Cup. They didn't have to go through the playoffs. They qualified directly and won their group in World Cup qualifying. In our rankings, they're number 12 in the world. And so we think very highly of Serbia. And Daniel had some interesting points about their performance at tournaments in that they showed really well in qualifying. They've gotten to World Cups. They play well enough to get there. But will the performance be there at the final tournament? I feel like this might be their time to really turn that page and become more of a dominant European team. They've got a ton of quality. And Leonardo, you mentioned a number of these names before. Tadic, Kostic, Vlahovic is playing well for Juventus. They're a really strong team. Sergei Milinkovic-Savic, of course, a really strong team that is playing well in Europe. Joe, I wanted to ask you, what do you think of Serbia? And I know we've talked about them on some previous podcasts as well, but are you impressed by them? Are you expecting big things from Serbia at the World Cup?
Yeah, I am. I am impressed with them. I'm impressed with their form going into this. To win the group, I think, was a good accomplishment for them. And if, you know, I've watched a few videos, you know, surrounding the team and you know, the lead into that last game against Portugal, that was kind of the decider. And there's a real sense of unity in this team. And I think that's maybe one of the characteristics that is a little different this time around than maybe in some others. You know, I seem to recall hearing on more than one occasion that, you know, there's some dissension in the Serbian team, you know, you know, it's a team I'm really interested to see and really, you know, interested to just watch again and see if they can continue that, you know, that form. But yeah, I mean, the names that you guys have already mentioned, you know, are really all the key names. And if you kind of go through the squad and look at them, you know, they do, they have players playing at a pretty high level, right? And, you know, so that's a good thing in their favor as well. And yeah, the first one against, that first game against Brazil is going to be a real firecracker, I think. And that's going to obviously set the tone for the group in a lot of different ways. So yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Craig, I want to ask you a little bit about Serbia and your thoughts, because they're a team that's on the rise, and they, as we mentioned before, in terms of the pot they came out of, are certainly one of the more difficult teams to be drawn out of that pot. You look at Switzerland, and according to our numbers, over the last 3 years, nobody's had a more difficult schedule in the world than Switzerland. Their opposition has been very good. They've consistently played against really good teams. They've played Portugal twice recently. They've played Spain twice recently. They've played England. They've played Italy. They've played a lot of good teams. And so when I look at Switzerland, I look at a team that the results haven't exactly been what you've wanted over the past year or two, but they've got a lot of good experience against really good teams. What are you expecting to see from them against a strong Serbia squad?
Yeah, definitely. These teams that you mentioned are obviously top teams, very difficult to play against. But I think for the most part, the teams really showed itself to be capable of playing against these teams and matching these teams. They played England at Wembley, only a friendly, but they've taken a draw. They beat Spain recently, they beat Portugal at home. Terrible start. There was other to that, injuries and 7, like 8 days or something. But yeah, that team for me is very capable of challenging against anyone. But Serbia are very good. I think they're better than the team we played in 2018, and they've got so many dangerous attacks. And that game in 2018 was very tight. It was only decided last minute winner. It really could have went either way. So maybe kind of naive in thinking that that game against Serbia might be very decisive, but Cameroon are going to be in there as well, so I probably shouldn't write them off either. But yeah, this Serbia team, they have potential to be a dark horse, and that's very worrying. I hope they aren't, for obvious reasons, because I also feel that Switzerland can be a dark horse if they turn up and play like they can. They showed that in the Euros. I mentioned that game against France. They had so many last 16 appearances in 2014, 2016, 2018, and maybe didn't really fulfill their potential against teams like Sweden and Poland. And then when they get to the last 16 of the Euros and play France, you're fearing the worst. And then that's when they finally go and reach a quarterfinal for the first time since 1954. So, yeah, this team has a habit of surprising not just me, but everyone. And I think they can again here, but it's going to be very difficult, there's no doubt.
I wanted to ask Craig about a player specifically, actually. I wanted to ask you about Noah Okafor. He's got 8 caps, 2 goals, but I seem to remember that he actually played a pretty significant role for Switzerland in the, if it was in the qualifying campaign or in the Nations League, I can't quite remember. But you know, what do you think his role is going to be at the World Cup? Like, is he going to be a starter, or is he going to be an impact player off the bench?
Yeah, typically he's been a player that hasn't always started games, but he's very proficient. We also say that he's been on Wolfsburg, a couple of games against Chelsea, and the talent, and he's still young. He's not got very many. He's already made his start in that fine campaign, and I think that he could, as the tournament goes on, and be surprised for him to be one of the guys that people are talking about they maybe didn't know about beforehand. We've mentioned all those players like Xhaka, the guys that everyone knows that don't necessarily follow Switzerland, but Okafor is someone that I think will really make people kind of stand up and take notice. I think he'll have a great tournament because he's got a very bright future. I think he's going to be very important for the team, not just in these matches, but in years to come.
And also, Craig, with Switzerland in the way that this group lines up, and not just Switzerland, but others as well, if you do finish second, and let's just say for argument's sake, we assume Brazil tops the group, you have a match against Group H winner, which is likely to be either Portugal or Uruguay. Switzerland just beat Portugal. Are you optimistic that Switzerland can not only get out of the group, but also continue to progress throughout the tournament?
Yeah, I'm optimistic always, but my big fear with this team is always that they don't. So I think this team, they can compete with anyone, as I've said. Portugal are difficult. We've got a record. We beat them at home just after they won Euros, and then they won 4-0 and was win the group in the final day. And then we lost to them again in the Nations League and then beat them at home in the return fixture. So, yeah, I think we can compete with Portugal or Uruguay, and I think we can get out of this group. But, yeah, it's going to be difficult, as I say. And there's also, I want to mention, in that squad, we've actually got 4 goalkeepers. I don't know if that's because Jan Sommer was injured. He was substituted for Gladbach after in a cup game, and he's not played since, but it doesn't seem to be too serious. But I don't know if that's a precaution. And we've also only got 1 starting right back, even though we have 2 that have featured in the past, but the manager opted not to go for them. So that's interesting as well. But yeah, I think this team, there's no reason why they can't compete, but they'll need to be at their best, even more so than 2018, when I thought they did fantastically well to go unbeaten in that group. But again, everyone's improved, it seems like.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think based on what Daniel said, he has high expectations for Cameroon as well. I wanted to ask about the squad as well. And I know we mentioned some of the big names that people may be familiar with, you know, Choupo-Moting, Aboubakar. We've heard those names. Is there anyone that you think could surprise for Cameroon? Because ultimately, if they do end up qualifying out of this group, you'll probably see strong performances from some of those players, but typically there's a name or two that pop up that people aren't as familiar with. Who do you think that could potentially be for Cameroon?
So I think looking at the squad, I think the only player that people might not be aware of who isn't very experienced is Christopher Wu. He's only recently come into the Ren starting lineup, and he's played relatively regularly for them. Centre-back, I think he's only 20. So he's probably the one to keep an eye on. But being 20-year-old centre-back, will he start? I'm not so sure, because they've got Nicolas Nkoulou, who's been around the block. He's been played in the Premier League, played in Greece, played in France for many years, played in Turkey as well. So they might go with him just purely because he's more experienced. But I think Wu now is a better player. So I'd expect him to, well, I hope that he'll start centre-back with Castelletto, but we'll have to see. So Wu would probably be the player to keep my eye out for, and I think that if he can perform well against the attacking strength of Brazil and Serbia and also the Swiss, then I think if he could be someone who catches the eye, he might be someone that clubs start looking at, potentially for the January window or into the summer. So he's definitely someone to keep an eye on from the Cameroon team.
Yeah, so admittedly, I am not super familiar with him, but he is from France. He's playing for the Cameroon national team, and I think you've seen with Ghana, a team that we've discussed a number of times, a lot of interest in getting some of these players that might be able to qualify for the national team. Is he one of those players that qualified with dual citizenship and chose the Cameroon national team? And do you think there's going to be more of that as Ghana has kind of set the tone there for other teams in Africa?
Yeah, I think with Cameroon, there's quite a few dual nationals in the team. I think it's quite common for African teams to look for some of the potentially or supposedly better players that are born in France or Switzerland or Germany, whatever European country it is, and I expect that trend to kind of continue with obviously the increased diversity in these European countries. So I think that, yeah, guys like Wu and others who are born in France or Belgium or Switzerland or Spain, for example, that they will be looking for those players, and they think that they're better than the players that are available who are from Cameroon, who are born in Cameroon even, they'll definitely look to bring them into the squad, because obviously at the end of the day, it's about winning, isn't it? So if they think that those players are going to come into the team and do better than what they've got, then they're going to want to bring them in, aren't they? So I expect that to continue, and it's been going on for quite a long time. African countries, last 10, 15 years, have been having quite a lot of dual nationals in the team. Not necessarily actually improving or doing better than they were before, probably actually worse, but that doesn't mean that those players aren't better than what they've got available. So I think that trend's going to continue, and I see, yeah, it's something that's going to just keep happening, I suspect.
Yeah, it's interesting. And want to ask you as well at this point, I think, for predictions. And I think we've heard a lot of good talk from Leonardo, who's super optimistic about Brazil, yourself and Cameroon. I think hearing from you about the squad, I'm certainly more optimistic about Cameroon than I was coming into this. And Craig as well, a lot of optimism for Switzerland too. So Daniel, based on what you've heard thus far, what are your expectations for Cameroon? Do you think they make it out of this group? And who do you think the two are? And then who do you ultimately think is going to win the whole tournament?
So I think with Cameroon, they could finish second, they could finish bottom. It's very much one of those that I think that's just the reality of it. Obviously, they're not going to win the group. I expect Brazil to win the group. I expect Brazil to win all three matches pretty comfortably, to be honest. So I think they're going to be top, and it's just going to be between the other three teams. And I think there will be close matches, 1-0, 1-1, 2-1, those sorts. That's what I'm expecting, those type of score lines. So I'm hopeful that Cameroon can be on the right side of those score lines. And I think the way Cameroon will play, they'll sit back and then try and hit on the counter. That's what I expect them to do. And I think that the Swiss, in games where they're kind of the favourites against decent teams, they tend to struggle. They're better against the better teams, and they tend to perform better in that environment where they can kind of sit back and counter-attack. I think the Serbs as well, it's similar. So I think Cameroon may be able to kind of manoeuvre themselves around that and get themselves into a position where they can nick a 1-0 or a 1-1 draw, and they get maybe 4 points, might be enough to get through in this group, 4 or 5 points. So I can see Cameroon getting second, and I'm hopeful that they can, but I'm not super confident in that. It wouldn't surprise me if they finish bottom as well. So we'll have to see. But Brazil and Cameroon, hopefully they'll be the two that go through. And then to win it, I think it's going to come down to Brazil and Argentina. But Brazil could play Argentina in the semi-final if they both win their group and win the matches that you'd expect them to win. So I think it's going to be one of those two that's going to win the tournament. So I'd probably go with, I'll go with Brazil just purely because they've got the best team.
Fair enough. Joe, what are you expecting out of this group?
You guys have all made very compelling arguments again. So I thought I had a clear picture going into this discussion, but now I'm not so sure. But I do think Brazil will top the group. I just think they're going to be too much for a lot of people. But yeah, you guys did a really good job of making your case for Switzerland and Cameroon. I would honestly be happy with any one of those three. I think it'd be absolutely thrilling to see, you know, to see Cameroon to do that, because I think there's a lot of people who don't expect that to happen per se, I guess including myself. But I would love to see that. I think I'm gonna settle on Serbia, and yeah, there's no real rhyme or reason. I just think Serbia's in really good form, I guess, is kind of my argument. And not that Switzerland isn't. I just wonder about Switzerland's ability to actually win a game versus maybe draw it. And I could be totally off base here, but yeah, I'm gonna go with Brazil and Serbia.
All right. Craig, what do you think about that? Upsetting?
A little bit, yeah. I think there's points there that are true, because attack-wise, we've not always been fantastic in terms of depth. Right now, Breland Bobo is probably our informed striker. Haris Seferovic has scored some big goals for us over the last few years. He's not playing well for Galatasaray. I think Brazil will really go up the group. I don't think there's any doubt about that. They'll be too strong. And hopefully we can come second. But it's a really exciting group. Maybe one of the best in the whole tournament. I think that's really unpredictable. And So I'll be delighted to see me again, and then we hopefully play Portugal or Uruguay, and I'll maybe see if we can get further than that. But yeah, I think second would be Brazil will win the tournament. But I agree that Argentina will be up there as well, but I'll go with Brazil, they're very strong.
Leonardo, what do you think? I assume you expect Brazil to win the group.
Yeah, that's what everybody thinks here. It's important for Brazil to win the group. Brazil is looking ahead. Of course, Brazil hasn't won a knockout game against an European team since the World Cup final in 2002, because lost to France in 2006, lost to Netherlands in 2020, then there were the 7-1, of course, in 2014, and then Belgium. So everybody is really expecting Brazil to up this game when the knockouts come, because in the group stage, Brazil has always done well. There's a danger here in the last match, because that's what I said before. We have to see if Brazil still needs the result, because in 4 years ago, Brazil still needed the result against Serbia, because it had 4 points. But in 1998, for example, Brazil had already won the first two matches against Scotland and against Morocco. So everybody was expecting Morocco to go through, but then Brazil lost to Norway because, well, it was the last game. It was already qualified. And then I remember the Moroccan player shocked, because how could Brazil lose to Norway? And then it happened. So maybe in the last round, if Cameroon needs the result and Brazil is resting players, I don't know what could happen. But if everything is normal, I still believe the attacking players from Serbia might give them the edge in this group. But I don't know. If Serbia, Switzerland, anyone is playing for a draw, it might be a tighter game. Like Daniel mentioned, Serbia is a little disappointing in tournaments recently. So I don't know how it would be. Craig mentioned that Switzerland had a lot of experienced players in this kind of situations. And also they got France out in the last time out, so it's very, very hard to play against them. But purely based on the strength of the attacking players they have right now, I would go with Serbia.
Yeah, I think it is a very difficult call for who's going to finish second in this group. The thing that sticks out to me, I'll go back to my comment on Switzerland earlier, is that they've played really good opposition. And not only have they played good opposition, they've actually gotten results against that good opposition as well. They've defeated Spain. And that was recently. That was not a long time ago. They defeated Spain in September. They defeated Portugal in June. And so they have beaten good teams. And I think it is interesting also, I believe, I'm not sure Leonardo or Daniel, who made the point, but against those strong teams, Switzerland does play well. And against a team like Serbia, perhaps the results haven't been there as much. But I think the other side of that, and just looking through some of the numbers on Serbia, where they've not had good results against good teams. They've had a lot of success against some of the lower ranked teams. And until they beat Portugal recently to qualify for the World Cup, you look back at their record against top 10, top 15 opposition, and it's been really poor. And I think for me, Serbia and Switzerland are fairly equal, I think, in terms of quality. Our rankings like Serbia a little bit more, but I feel like there's something with Switzerland of having done it before and having beaten some of those good teams. So I'm going to go against our rankings a little bit and pick Switzerland to finish second ahead of Serbia. I think Serbia is a really good side, and they could make me look foolish. I think they're certainly a team that, not only if they do finish second, and the question I asked Craig previously in terms of how far Switzerland can go, I think you have to wonder the same about Serbia, because if they do get Portugal, they just beat Portugal. And so I think they're a team that has a wide range of outcomes. I think you could see them do really well and continue to progress and maybe even reach the quarterfinals. And then I think you could also see them maybe fall flat and not even qualify from the group. So I'll pick Switzerland to finish second behind Brazil here. But I think unanimous across the board that Brazil is going to win the group. Leonardo, I just wanted to ask you also, as the tournament unfolds with Brazil and potentially Argentina on the same side of the bracket, are you hoping for a Brazil-Argentina semifinal?
Well, it's pretty normal because I don't believe either of them will be the second place in the group. So it would put them, one of them being second, they would go to opposite sides and could still make the final. But Argentina, I believe it's even more favorite in their group than Brazil, because right now Mexico is not playing well and Poland is underachiever in tournaments, and Saudi Arabia. It's easier for Argentina to score 9 points in their group than Brazil. But anyway, I don't believe any of them will be the second place. So it would be a huge, huge, huge semifinal. But first, Brazil will have to break this streak of not beating European teams, because Brazil could get Spain, could get Germany, could get Croatia or Belgium again in the quarterfinal. So it probably will be a tough game against an European powerhouse in the quarterfinal. So if Brazil beats an European team like it hasn't done in past World Cups, it will grow a lot in confidence and will reach to play Argentina with high spirit. So, but it's really different. We have a Galvão Bueno. He's a national idol. He's the speaker of the matches like zillions of World Cups ago, and he has this catchphrase, which is winning is good, but winning against Argentina is much, much better, you know. I don't think how it would be to lose against Argentina this World Cup. So it's a national pride to beat Argentina here, and it would be this game to be talked for generations, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And Joe, I just wanted to close with one additional thought, because looking through this group, I think this is the toughest group of all eight groups. I think you look at the quality of Brazil, you look at the quality of both Serbia and Switzerland. Cameroon definitely is going to be there. To me, this is the strongest of all the groups. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't disagree. I'd have to take another look at all the different groups, because they're not coming to my head right now. But yeah, I mean, we've, you know, yeah, I think there's something to that for sure.
All right. Well, that will wrap it up for this preview. Wanted to take the time again to thank our guests, Leonardo, Daniel, Craig. Thank you so much for joining us. For our listeners, you can find us on Twitter at @WindowIntlPod is the podcast account. You can find myself on Twitter at @We_Global. We Global Football, international football statistics, odds, projections, all that good stuff. And you can find Joe on Twitter at 12th Yank for more international coverage as well. So I want to thank the listeners again for joining us and listening to our World Cup preview series. This is the final one. So if you've listened to them all, thank you so much. If you're just listening to this one, check out the others. They're out there and great. And we've had phenomenal guests on our show and are really thankful to have them again. So thank you all for listening and enjoy the World Cup in Qatar.